I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. Today's show is proudly brought to you by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more about their products and services. And we thank them for partnering with Tech Central to bring you these great interviews. My guest in the studio today is no stranger to Tech Central. Nomvuyiso Bhatyi is a former Director General of the Department of Communications and Digital Technologies, and she's now CEO of ACT, or the Association of Comms and Technology, an industry lobby group for South Africa's six largest telecommunications operators. Nomvuyiso, it's good to see you. Welcome to the studio. Thanks for the time.
Thank you for having me, Duncan. It's always a pleasure to come to your beautiful studios, always.
Thank you. And it's always great to host you here and to have these meaningful conversations. And there's a heck of a lot to talk about at the moment, actually.
So much has happened.
I'm very glad you're here and we can unpack some of it. But let's start with Starlink and the satellite licensing process that is currently underway at ICASA. There's been reams and reams written about this. I think not all of it entirely accurate. Maybe from the ACT's perspective, could you give us an overview of this process that ICASA is going through at the moment, and ACT's sort of view on the controversy that we've seen around the licensing of Starlink and the talk about potentially changing the licensing rules in South Africa around BEE. What is ACT's broad view on all of this?
So as ACT, our position has been clear insofar as licensing or any other topic for that matter. Or it always centers around regulatory parity, mm-hmm. that it should not matter that you are a satellite network operator, a mobile network operator. When you come into the South African market in itself, the rules should be applicable to you as they are applicable to the next person. Mm-hmm. That has been our approach.
South African companies and international
mm-hmm. companies. And we have said this insofar, if you think about universal service obligations, quality of service issues, so the same rules should be applicable. End user and subscriber rules, they should be the same because you are coming within this South African context. So purposes of satellite, ICASA did the inquiry, and mm-hmm. I know, and I'm glad you said it that way. There's a lot of misconception insofar as the process that ICASA started last year already, that the LEOs Act, it's been targeting only at Starlink. We also made that error, I must say. And not only, we were not even talking about Starlink, we're like, why only satellite? Mm. There's so many problems. Why have you chosen this topic to look at? And ICASA clarified themselves in the hearing. They say, look, here we had issues such as around pricing, such as access. Yes, we're actually, they said in the hearing, we're focusing as well on those people that are already here in the market within the South African context that have been asking us different questions. It had nothing to do with this whole war that is happening. And we're like, okay, that's good to know. So we know ICASA is going to finalize that process and have findings soon. So for us, we still wear the cap that says, first and foremost, regulatory parity, be it an over-the-top player, be it a satellite network or provider, be it a mobile network operator. So just have the same rule, because you know in South Africa, the focus has always been, oh, these are the major operators, but don't have different roles for different people.
Yeah. Okay. So does that need to be a completely separate process that ICASA needs to embark on, or does it fit in with the public hearings that it's been having, or with the investigation that it's doing at the moment into licensing of satellite services? How would you like to see this issue of BEE and equity equivalence, et cetera, dealt with mm-hmm. by ICASA? Mm-hmm. What's the correct approach?
So we think, I must say, first, Minister Malanzi and his team, they're on the right track. Mm-hmm. We support them, right? And why we support them, we are saying this has happened in other sectors. It has happened in automotive, BMW, just how it did happen to them. And we're saying how we understand the legislation, the ECA, as it currently is reading, it puts it as an alternative, but we're only thing we differ with him on mm-hmm. is that it's focusing on new entrants. We're like, no, there are people that have already made investments in South Africa, right? And those people as well should be considered. So we're going to make our detailed mm-hmm. submission in this regard. So for us, the the issue of BEE and EIP is not only applicable to applicants, because once you're a licensee at ICASA, there are certain things that you have to maintain moving forward. Mm-hmm. Think about it this way, practically. If we're going to take the policy directive as it's written insofar as new entrants, it means those people that have been here in South Africa, they will always be subjected to 30% historically disadvantaged groups. And all the EIP, remember, everyone still has to have a triple BEE certificate to operate, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They'll still do all the other issues that are required from a DTI point of view. But over and above, they're required to do the 30% historically disadvantaged group. I'm saying, since you want to align that the ECA is aligned with the triple BEE legislation, which is what the ECA intended to do with the amendment, don't only focus on new entrants. Make sure that the playing field is leveled for everyone, even those people that are already in the market. We know that the focus will be like, oh, but multinationals, but all these people are bringing investment. But there are people that have invested. That's why I pulled the example of BMW that has been here forever. But this happened in their industry. So we are in support, and we will be making more inputs quite detailed inputs to the minister, just to demonstrate and say, what happened when the ECA was amended? What was the intention of the legislature in this regard, and how we propose it should be considered by him and his team?
So if I understand what you're saying correctly, the requirement for the 30% HDP, or historically disadvantaged persons, is not contained in the Electronic Communications Act.
It is.
It's the
first thing. So yeah. It says 30% historically disadvantaged, I think, individuals, or, right? And then there's the or, and then it talks to Triple BEE Act, equity equivalent. There's the or.
It's in there.
It's in there, the section 9.2 of the Electronic Communications
Act. So the ECA is not the issue that Musk has a problem with. It's the requirements that ICASA has applied to licensing in South Africa. So it's an ICASA regulation issue,
correct,
not a law issue.
No.
Okay. So it's probably fairly easy to remedy it.
It's almost like trying to, how do I say it? If you've worked long enough here at Tech Central, when somebody young comes in and introduces a new role, it's very difficult for you to change your mind. But you must always understand why they are changing. And I think that's the part that even when I was watching the whole debate in Parliament, I was like, but your Parliament, you came up with this legislation. You amended it, right? After the Vodacom Neotel judgment, you made it like this. And perhaps the message has not filtered through how it should be implemented. And I think that's where then a lot more thinking and not emotive thinking needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So this draft policy direction that the minister has now published and sent to Parliament for further debate. Is it normal for one of these things to become out in draft form and then go to Parliament for further debate? Doesn't the minister normally just say, here's a policy direction, ICASA, go and have a look at it?
So this is how it happens, because you know I was at ICASA. So essentially, the minister would have started this process 6-7 months ago with ICASA, because the minister is obliged in terms of the ICASA Act.
He first spoke about it about eight, nine months ago.
Correct. Mm. That he would have conversations with ICASA to try and find each other with ICASA. ICASA will come up with its views, and then ICASA says, no, this is how it needs to work. And he will publish it, as he has done correctly, for public comments for 30 days, right? And then we make inputs. He may elect to have hearings. We shout at him. We have all nice things to say to him and all horrible things to say to him. And then he makes up a page or two pages to ICASA. Thou shalt do this. ICASA, consider this policy directive.
He can't tell ICASA what to do, though.
Please consider this.
Because they're an independent regulator in the Constitution.
Correct. But to assist himself, he needs to, instead of being too legalistic, explain.
Mm.
You need to explain why this is important, why this should be done. And perhaps, and I know I'm no advisor to minister, but to even talk to, let's say, the BEE Commission within DTIC, because they know this thing, they are the experts, and try to guide in terms of how ICASA should consider, because ICASA has a right to say no. The only thing that was new was when something like this is in the public domain, Parliament starts debating it. Mm-hmm. That was new. So ICASA then has an option to consider to say, yes, we have considered it, and yes, we agree, and this is how we're going to do it. And ICASA is required in law to give minister feedback. There's no time frame, but the minister can say, give me feedback on a quarterly basis. How far are you in terms of considering this directive? And the ICASA needs to respond to the minister. So it's two directives. It's the one on EAIP and the one on licensing of IECNS, right? So it's the two directives that ICASA, that is still, minister is still out in the public domain for commentary.
Okay. Yeah. So this whole process, how long should it really take feasibly? I mean, do there need to be public hearings? Is this something that's going to take months and months and months? Or is it something ICASA can simply look at and say, yeah, that actually makes sense. Let's just amend it.
For a minister's point of view, it doesn't take long, right? It can take anything between 2 to 3 months. From an ICASA point of view, which becomes tricky, so because ICASA has this actually in government annual performance plan, if this was not part of their plans for this financial year, it's not budgeted for, they can say, oh, minister, we're still taking advice on this thing, and actually it's not part of our plans. Can we look at it next year? Or they can apply to have their annual performance plan to be amended. So ICASA then...
So if it's not on the performance plan, they're not going to deal with it?
They can. They can reprioritize.
Okay.
There is that issue. There's that
option. Because I imagine this is quite urgent.
Yeah. They can... No, yeah. But it's urgent to whom?
Well, to the investors, to Musk.
That's so you have to be in. So assuming then they say, yes, we'll consider it, we're able to... restructure our budgets and our planning, and ICASA then has a long road ahead to do. So they have to do a discussion document, which is 30 days. After the discussion document, they'll come up with the findings document. Depending which process they choose, they can do that. Or they can say, actually, we agree with the minister. Our regulations on ownership and control needs to be amended, right? And in amending our regulations, which is the shortest thing that they could do, let's take it out for comments, considering that we have this policy directive, and we'll insert the new wording that is being proposed by the minister, and let's almost fill the pulse of the market. Let's put it out there for commentary. That is 30 business days from ICASA. And then depending, if everyone says yay, assuming that ICASA will only focus on the amending of that provision, then that can take between 60 to 90 days.
Okay. So it could all happen this year still?
It could happen this year still, especially for that, right? The one that is more complicated, which I think... people keep missing, is the first policy directive, the one that was issued on licensing of IECNS. That one is more complicated.
Why is it more complicated?
So before ICASA, so its minister says ICASA must consider, and is still out for public comments, to license a new individual network service licensee. So in terms of legislation, ICASA then is required to do a market study to say how competitive the market is. So I'll make the example. ICASA did this in recent years. I can think of two instances. They did this in recent years on the licensing of subscription TV when we had the ODMs of this world, the Moja Labs of those. Yes. So first they do that. They'll do that and then they'll say, okay, there is space in the market to license a new, it's almost like doing a regulatory impact assessment. There is more space, there's space to license more network service licensees in the market, and we'll open up the market, let's say, for two people to come.
Isn't that very old school though? Shouldn't we just let the market, just the investor decide who's going to compete?
I know.
Rather than spending months a regulator deciding whether the market's going to work or not. What does the regulator actually
never, and you've seen it in these examples that I've given. It's never, whilst the CASA will say yes, the market will be able to function. We've seen in practicality, by the time the person comes in, they can't make a success.
The pay TV market was a disaster.
Correct. You know it very well. So that by the time, because it's about the timing as to when you're coming in. So, and I know that, for example, a lot of the, especially the ISPs, have been calling for this. That's why I'm saying, for me, it's not even about the Starlink, that within the South African market, people have been calling in for a more opening up of a network licensing regime in South Africa. And if you think about it, that network is being built by only specific people in South Africa, not everyone. Even from a fiber point of view, you have your Vumatels, you have your dark fiber, you know, the big guys. And those guys are just essentially doing only part of what is required for a licensee. But from what I understand, the policy directive then was to really open up the market and make it competitive, instead of you going and buying those licenses that are sitting dormant at ICASA. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about what's going on in satellite, because it's really, really interesting. And Musk isn't the only game in town, although he does seem to be leading in the low Earth orbit space. Of course, Jeff Bezos from Amazon is chasing him hard with Project Kuiper. There's AST Space Mobile. There are a whole lot of established and startup satellite providers that are really eyeing this opportunity. I worry that we're going to look up into the sky in 10 years and not see stars, just little dots moving around all over the place. What does the emergence of LEO satellites mean for South African telecommunications operators and our ecosystem here? Are companies like Starlink a direct threat to your Vodacoms and MTNs and Cell Cs and Telkoms? Or is it more about a co-opetition kind of environment where the big mobile operators will partner with the likes of Kuiper and Starlink to provide services to end users in areas where they don't have coverage? Or do you think the likes of Starlink eventually are just going to see themselves as telecommunications providers and see these in-market mobile operators as superfluous and, you know, get out of our way, we're coming in?
So no one is ever sure, but how we looked at it when we're doing our study internally, we said, actually, they are here to complement, right? Because let's be honest, there are areas in South Africa that mobile network operators cannot reach. It's a fact. We cannot say, well, force them to roll out, because some of the topography is just not possible to have such a rollout. So what we say, we see it as complementary, and by that we say, when you come in into the market, people decide, right? Especially in those areas that there's just no services, they will decide that, look, for me, I am willing and able to pay X amount of rands to have access to this service. Yes, and I know there's so much noise about the specific satellite provider. And I was looking, the numbers are not, they don't have so many subscribers.
But Starlink.
I think, yes, they don't have, but the way people would think they have so many. So you're like, okay, they don't have so many subscribers that you would expect. The last I checked, it was less than, I think it was sitting at, I think that was beginning of this year. Globally, at less than 3 million.
Okay.
And you think about it, but the way, I think it's just the enigma of the man.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and you think of people such as like Kuiper, as you think about, they have more reach, especially in certain areas within the markets that they operate in. But because it's not, people do not associate satellite with Amazon. Right, they associate them with certain kind of business, so it's that kind of thing. So for us, we're saying it's complementary. There are areas that it will require this, but I think I saw an article yesterday from you guys, which we were we kept nudging them at the science and innovation that what about SKA? Because we know the rules of SKA about the quiet zone, about even network mobile network operators are not allowed there. Or the only people that are allowed are radio and television, also by special circumstances. And no one has, because it's such, no one ever thinks of the Northern Cape, right? And the scientific world are the ones that said, no, don't touch us. We want whoever comes in the satellite space, this is supposed to be clean. So I think, which is already, we've seen a lot of LEOs. If you go to Northern Cape, that's where you have the cleanest sky, South Africa. So,
although, funnily enough, that's probably where these LEO services are most needed.
Exactly. But because of what we agreed to in 1991 for purposes of scientific research, that it is required that we have that satellite, the SKA within the Karoo. So for us, it's one of those things that says, look, there is no harm, but they must come in through the right door. That's it. They are here to complement, right, the services that are already here. Think about it. There's somebody that I saw on the freeway that has a mobile, the new network operator. Think Lemon and Melon.
Melon, somebody, yes.
I was like, okay. So you can, it is what it is.
Interesting times. So do you think that these LEO services will help bridge the digital divide at all? Or do you think that it's too expensive and it's only going to be used by, say, farmers and, you know, remote mining operations and that sort of thing? Is it more of a business type internet service? Or do you think it'll eventually filter down to, I don't know, rural Zululand, rural Transkei?
So I think it all goes to economies of scale. Because I've seen, I think, the Kenya example in Kenya, that it has actually even gone to residential areas because of the pricing that was on offer in Kenya. But that has had a quite catastrophic results because the service hasn't worked, because I don't think they've had such much demand as they've had in Kenya. So they've done that in Kenya. But in other markets within Africa, it's been mostly the affluent, the businesses, the people that are in outlying areas, let's say the mines, the farms, that has, because of the pricing that has been available. So if you think of countries such as, I think, Zambia, the pricing is so high. And you don't know what, in terms of economies of scale, what happens there and then in Kenya, because in Kenya, it would seem as if it is affordable in that market, and therefore that's why they were able to do that. Whereas in other countries such as Zambia, it's more the people that will be doing the farming, the people that are doing the lodges, that kind of thing. And we know what happens there because of the animals, the networks are hardly functioning in those areas. So it's been sort of like that. So even here in South Africa, the partnerships that some of my members have with Leon, it's mostly to connect those kind of communities where there's a gap. Even when you are driving on the N1 to Polokwane, there are areas that there is just no connectivity. So those are the areas that are being looked at, right? And also when I say complementary, think of it this way. The scourge of vandalism that is happening in South Africa, that it is so difficult for network operators to go to other areas to roll out infrastructure and keep rolling it out because it keeps being destroyed. So and I'll use the old world, gap filler, those areas that it could also be available, but that will mean that people are going to pay more because the alternatives are going to be far few and in between, because there are markets that people will just like with areas that will say, the examples that you made, KwaZulu-Natal, the areas that are just a no-go area that, like, no, we've been building. There is infrastructure mafia. There is destruction of infrastructure. There is all those things.
I suppose that there are business opportunities as well for someone who could, you know, buy one of these Starlink kits or Project Caper kits or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Put it in and then offer some sort of Wi-Fi hotspot service where like a community center or...
Correct. Actually, and those, and you've seen it works, especially in rural areas.
Yeah.
I always think of rural Transcar, which is, I find, is the most awkward thing. One of your partners, MTN, they're so dominant in Solo. And I didn't know this because they decided to partner with an agricultural school there.
Okay.
And why is everyone using MTN? They have those bibs, right? People selling airtime.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, no, it's the only network that actually works here. And I was like, why? No, because it has decided to partner with this big agricultural school here, which I didn't even know existed. So there are those, you choose your niche.
Mm-hmm.
Even if a place is so rural and people do not have money, you are able to say, okay, I want to do this to make it succeed. Mm-hmm. So, it is a business opportunity for some.
Okay. Let's change tack a little bit and talk about the 2G and 3G switch off. I know we spoke about that last time you were here. And I think it was the previous minister who'd set a deadline, I think, at the end of 2027 to switch off something or other. I forget which it was or both. I forget what you said at the time about whether the industry or the government should be decided. I think you've said industry should make this decision. But where are we currently? Is there still a hard and fast deadline?
No.
Has it fallen away?
So although the date is there, the thing that the policy directive says now, the one of May last year, I think it was May last year, I don't even forget, the election day, the eve of election.
Yes, it was just before the election. That's right. Yeah.
So it actually now has, they've come up with a new wording that says ICASA must do a regulatory impact assessment to test on when should switch off, when it should happen. So we're like, okay, that's good. That because ICASA, in any case, when it does, it should still come back to industry and ask questions and then do the entire process in itself. But from our side, the things that are encouraging is through the conversations we've had with Minister Malatsi, he was able to go, because we don't have access to Minister of Finance, he was able to have conversations with Minister of Finance, and there's a relaxation in this regard. And as well, we are having conversations with ITEC, International Trade Export something within DTIC. Mm-hmm. So this is an entity within DTIC that deals with importation of goods in terms of tax rebates, in terms of offerings that are happening. So we are having conversations with the chief commissioner there, and we are saying we'd like them to consider recommending to the minister the start of a transition period wherein the importation of obsolete devices in South Africa should be minimized, like removing off whatever tax incentives that were there, so that it's difficult for people to come in. So have a transition. We're not saying just boom, advise those people that are bringing those handsets in South Africa, and then come then with a second option that says then the date of stopping the importation will be this. So there is that DTI process that is happening on their side. The thing that we didn't get right, although we tried, we're also trying to have especially 4G handsets to be considered for not to have VAT.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to look at it in context. And I know people say, oh, and you know my members do not sell handsets. I always say this, they don't sell handsets. Yes, they benefit from handsets because somebody makes a call or does whatever the thing that they want to do goes to the internet. However, we are saying the VAT issue for this reason, simple reason. A person will come move from a handset that is now 200 rand, right? If you think of the entry level handset for 2G handset to a handset which is still quite affordable, but it's not affordable if you are looking at our employment rates of a handset of 1,800, right? Which is a huge jump. And now, yes, there is the rebate, the relaxation of the luxury tax, ad valorem tax, but we're just saying also for these type of handsets, consider not them to be VAT free. So we did make a submission to National Treasury, but it's only one way. So there was no response there. But it's one of those things that we're trying to say. Connectivity, digital economy is what is going to make people to have access to jobs, all these things
that are going to drive the economy.
Correct. So, you know, like just consider that, but we know there are bigger problems compared to that. So there has been a lot of work that we have been doing in this regard. And as you may recall, the last time we had this conversation, we also reached out to ICASA to say start a process and think about it. I know you work with young people, they won't remember this. The first handset in South Africa was a 2G handset, right? Since 1994, ICASA has never withdrawn a type approval certificate, right? And we have suggested to them, it's still their decision, that they need to consider a process of removing a type approval certificate. Apologies, I'm so used to text.
No.
Yes, so a type approval certificate. Otherwise, you run the risk that you will have type approval certificates for obsolete technologies forever, right? If you think of television sets, AM, FM radios, all those things, so those type approval certificates will exist forever. So there has to be a process to, when something is obsolete, how do you remove the the type approval certificate from an ICASA point of view? So ICASA has been open to starting this discussion internally because they're saying no, they are uncertain how to do it and would like no, but there is a process that is set out in your act, but it might take longer, but start it, test the market.
Yeah. But if you remove the type approval certificate, say on an old Nokia 2110 or something, what is the practical implication of doing that? Does that phone stop working?
No. So what happens, especially for 2G devices? 2G devices will always be supported till the end of time. Anything 2G up until
because there's so many machine to machine applications,
so many,
IoT,
so many,
and all sorts of things.
I like 3G.
If we switch off 2G, it would be a disaster.
Of course, it will. You know, like you think of your ATMs and all those things. So 2G will always be there, but there are devices that are specific that it's not even supported. Think about it. Like you would have read, I think I read it here, that there are devices that won't be supported by WhatsApp by a certain date, right? So you can't even do a software upgrade. So it's just there. Even if you have it, it looks
obsolete.
It's obsolete. So it's those kind of examples that when people that are involved in technology, they say, there's just not even, I'll use this, there are no spare parts to fix it, right? It's not like your Landy that you can drive and then go next door and find a part. So there's just nothing that they can do from a software upgrade. So it's those kind of things that says, we even said, you can start with 3G because no one is selling a 3G handset. No one is using a 3G handset. No one is investing in 3G. Start there. Test the market so that you are able to have all these obsolete technologies not being available and thinking you have to monitor things that do not exist.
It sounds like we're going to end up with a situation where 3G gets switched off in the next couple of years. We're left with 2G, but on a much thinner sliver of spectrum. And then whatever spectrum is then freed up through that process will be made available to 4G. Maybe 5G as well.
Because they're already refarming the spectrum already.
Already doing
it,
yeah.
Yes, they're already doing it. So we are quite spot on, especially when it comes to 3G, because really very few people are supporting, OEMs are supporting 3G devices in terms of their systems. But because they know what it means to still support 2G, they will have those still in place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just want to come back to the tax issue then. National Treasury has scrapped the ad valorem or luxury tax on basic smartphones that cost less than 2,500 rand. Does that go far enough? Should we even have luxury taxes on any smartphone?
So I'll say no, but that's me thinking from a technological point of view. And however, if you're a government, you have to collect revenue. isn't it? And handsets is, and I said and devices, mm-hmm. is one of those things. It is not correct, though, to have anything that is technology-related to be treated as a luxury. If you think about it, younger children these days, they're being referred, even if you apply for a school, grade 1, grade 8, you have to go to an app, right? And now, an app doesn't work on a 2G device. We have to be honest about it, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They only work on a 4G device. You think about it from a health point of view. You go to cities that allow people to actually, especially in the major cities, to book primary health care at a clinic using an app, mm-hmm. right? And you think about employment, that all the drives in terms of registering your CV and everything else, they will refer you for your CV to be kept on this the huge thing that wherever they have, especially here in Gauteng and the Western Cape and KZN, they'll say an app. You think about, and those are just like the basic examples that I can think of. You think of somebody, a younger matriculant applying for, let's say, university, applying for NEFSAS, isn't it? You're referred to an app. Mm. Some of us that watch news, and now. What has happened, and I'll talk from where I'm from, where I come from, because I was born and raised in East London. Mm-hmm. What has happened is, I'll make the example of university students. Come January, we have a city hall in East London, Buffalo City. Big, beautiful city hall. Mm-hmm. There are queues of young people with brown envelopes this January. Mm-hmm. The mayor has called in NEFSAS to assist people to complete forms. You won't see it here. You won't see it here because people here have access. Because remember, there are less internet cafes in such areas. However, if I have my own device and NEFSAS keeps referring young people, especially those people that are in that low income gaps, to apply, which is a good thing. We have this on our app, and it's a free downloadable mm-hmm. app, but I can. My handset is a 2G handset. I could never be able to mm-hmm. do that. So for us, we said the initial thing was like, actually for both 4G, 5G, scrap the luxury tax, because we have seen in other countries, those that adopt technology earlier, there's a growth in the economy.
I was just going to say, I mean, we want South African kids to be playing with AI and, mm-hmm. and all these tools, and the only way they're going to do that is through a smartphone.
Correct. But
are we crazy to be putting luxury taxes on these things?
It's just one of those things that is just, I think it worked at a particular point in time. Now people are just used to it because it's billions of rands. Mm. I don't think it's correct. But I think the stance that they have taken on the 2,500, it's a step in the right direction. But I believe that you're still also limiting South Africans that, this is where you're supposed to be. And instead of saying, actually, we want the economy to grow, and in order for the economy to grow, people need to have access to these devices. And I know people will be like, look, but what will happen to the fiscus? And we are saying that the fiscus, if the digital economy functions properly, you bring in competition, you make sure there's regulatory parity, you make sure that there's devices available in the market, young people are able to figure, you know, whoever thought there'll be content creators, whoever thought all these things will happen, that the economy in itself finds answers. The government doesn't always have to say, this is how we're going to make money. But I will just restrict myself and focus mostly on 4G because I know on 5G, it's just one of those topics that they do not want to. They see it as a luxury good. Mm. And when I explain to young people, they think it's a joke. And I'm like, think about it. It's like Louis Vuitton, Macosa, you wearing Nikes. And so that's how. They're like, huh? I said, yes, it's how it is. That's how it's looked at it as a. And I said, they're like, oh, maybe it's like those they call the famous brands. Then I'm like, no. Even the cheapest brands that you know, It's about the components that are, it's not only about the handset, it's even the things that are inside the phone. That's why you had that person in KZN who tried to have an assembly plant, it didn't work. No matter what it did, the components were still being taxed as a luxury as luxury good. So there is it's just not a good idea ever. It has never been a good idea at all. I don't think so. If we are serious about digital economy,
Hopefully, our finance minister is listening to this conversation. So let's talk about the spectrum auction. We've had one, when was it, 2022?
Yes, 2022.
So time's marching on. It's been 3 years since the last spectrum auction. There were plans, I believe, to have the next one by the end of March 2026, which is the end of ICASA's financial year. I see they're now talking about holding the spectrum auction in the 2027 financial year. Are we leaving this too late again, or is this okay?
I think it's okay, and I'll tell you why I'm saying it's okay. Because if ICASA and everyone is being honest, we have not derived what we thought was going to be derived from the last auction.
In terms of,
first of all, the rollout that was anticipated for 5G connectivity, the rollout is not where ICASA had anticipated, because ICASA had the outside-in rule, and network operators, they know you can't make money in rural areas. Mm. They started with inside-out.
So they just ignored ICASA?
No, not even, because you have to be able to pay for that rural connectivity, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
it was Germany that pioneered that model.
Which is a total different market in itself.
But the idea is build the infrastructure in the rural areas first and then in the cities.
Yes.
But the demand is in the cities. So.
Correct. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the whole issue of obligations. So the universal service obligations that they were placed on licensees, they were only finalized last year, 2024.
Oh.
They only received their licenses last year, 2024, March. And ICASA, yes, no one ever thinks about those. And ICASA says, well, we want you to roll out 50% of these obligations within 1 year.
Hmm?
Yes, I love how you look. And which was a near impossible task. And we kept writing to ICASA. Even our members met with ICASA individually. ICASA says, it's possible. But one of the things that was evident, that was the making sure coordination within government, the entire government system, so that there is an understanding that no network operator can just rock up at a clinic and just install or roll out rock up at a library and just install. There has to be a person that would have said, okay, you will meet person X, and this is what will happen in this regard. And this person will give you their ID for purposes of RICA and all those things. It's things that have become so complex that even the database, we had to clean the database that was given to the network operators by ICASA. We had to apply to the Competition Commission because we're doing it as a group, but also treating people individually. We're saying then we had people on board to assist us in terms of rolling it out. It's not been easy. It's been, yes, rolling out has happened, but on more on a smaller scale, because people move jobs, because there is no agreement, especially from a Department of Basic Education point of view. They agree with us this week. Next week, we hardly find each other. So it's been a very, very difficult issue. So I think one thing that has been underestimated is the assumption that how we have always had the uptake of technology, you just come plug and play, cool. But that is because you're an individual. That's because you are running a business. Everything is within your control. Whereas in such environments, there are issues of privacy, there's issues of ensuring that you have in certain areas, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, some of the schools have closed. The list has to be reviewed. So it's been just one of the schools, and the health has been the greatest, challenge. for us in terms of even our members. So the 50% was never going to be met. Just one of those things that are within our eyesight as ACT. So it's this issue of the rolling out of infrastructure and the issue of universal service obligations. But there's more other things that have not been achieved, which are not within our line of sight, which I'm sure ICASA knows as well best, because network operators are required to submit compliance reports, and they will say these, and because they have to be certified, they will say these are the areas that we're falling short, these are the areas that we are succeeding. So ICASA is aware of all the challenges that are being faced. Yeah.
To what extent did, I mean, when the spectrum auction happened and in the year or two after that, we had excessive load shedding in South Africa. To what extent did the requirement, the need by the telecommunications operators to build resilience into their networks, spend huge amounts of money on battery backup and generators and all that sort of thing, impact their 5G deployment?
It did. Actually, that's one of the reasons we told ICASA, especially in 2023, we said funds had to be shifted around and they will have to prioritize the current existing customers in ensuring that there's alternative power supply available. And we said to ICASA some of the requirements that they put forward for 5G rollout will not be realized. Yes, they had then one-on-one meetings with our members to actually understand the scale of what was happening. But you'll recall there was a certain period that this was a challenge. But to ICASA's credit, the very same year, they did an inquiry on the impact of load shedding to the sector. Forget that they only published their findings last week. That's a story for another day. But they recognized that indeed the load shedding was such a huge, had such a huge impact on our sector during that period. Now we're having a new issue, which is water and an unavailability of water. And our sector is not a priority sector from water. And remember, we don't use clean water from data centers. And we're affected in Gauteng, Western Cape. When I say Western Cape, I mean Cape Town and Durban, because that's where major data centers are. And we just started the work that we need now to be water experts. And that is also going to have an impact, that you'll always have services in areas that already have, because people have to shift funds. You take your CAPEX spend that you meant to roll out infrastructure. You're like, okay, I need to fix this because my highest paying customers do not have available services. And that's what happened during load shedding. You should have seen the cost of diesel. You should have seen the cost of alternative power solutions. When you're looking at the financials, you're like, wow. I mean, looking at, there's a time that we were looking at from just the maintenance of infrastructure, load shedding, all the things that happened that year, just looking at our, and building new infrastructure, just our members, in excess of, we calculated over a period of 2 years, from an investment, it was in excess of 150 billion.
Yeah.
2 years. And we're like, no, it can't be. And we keep, like, okay. Like, even now, there's some data that we received during that period that we're like, it cannot be that we've actually brought in people on board, that the amount of money that was spent in 2023 especially, and a bit of 2022-2023, is just mind-boggling. You're like, so you don't even trust yourself when you're looking at the figures. You're like, no. So that's why we are having somebody test the figures.
So in summary, spectrum auction, in your view, is not that urgent right now?
No.
Okay. And do you think the next spectrum auction is going to be quite contentious? I know that in Europe, there seems to be a fight brewing between the Wi-Fi lobby group and mobile operators over who's going to get access to the spectrum around 6 gigahertz. And there seems to be a bit of a fight brewing in Europe over that. Do you think that's going to come here as well?
There's always this. Remember, we had the whole fight about WOAN.
About?
WOAN.
The WOAN, yes.
Remember,
wholesale,
we had that
open here. Access
yes.
network.
There
yes.
was that whole fight. And then there was a whole fight about the set aside for Centec. We always have, I mean, there's no there's nothing lost on us that there will be drama around this, and there'll be people.
We're good at drama.
Yes, no, we always. So there will always be something happening, and we're not expert. We're just saying also the timing of it, that people as well need to realize the return on if people have spent money, and during the auction. And remember, after an auction, get a piece of paper. All I say to people, you don't have an idea, you get a piece of paper, but there's still more that is required of you. And it has been tough, and I'll tell you this for free. It has, because I've been at ACT for 3 years, it's been a tough 3 years. I thought I knew things when I was on the other side, but I never saw raw data, because data goes used to go to analysts. Now I'm the person that is looking at the data, and I'm like, no, there's something wrong with this. That's what I'm saying. You have problems of even trusting yourself, that you're like, no, somebody else has to check this. It cannot be that people are still surviving after what they went through in 2022 2023.
Nomvuyiso Bachi is CEO. I've said ACT earlier. It's ACT, the Association of Comms and Technology. As always, great talking to you, and thank you so much for your time.
Likewise, great talking to you as well.